This is the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast, a production of ProWrestling.net. I'm Will, he's Jake. You can follow us on Twitter at It's Will Time and at Barnett Jake. On today's show, what one thing would Will and Jake change about the professional wrestling business? So, Jake, did you know there was a lot going on this past week? This little thing called SummerSlam happened. Apparently, it's the biggest slam of the summer.
Yeah, it was a busy weekend, like in between NXT and then, you know, it's just like that full-on assault, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. It just feels like there's just this blitz of content. It's tough to get through it all. Like, by the time it's over, I'm like, oh man, I feel like I don't want to watch wrestling for a month, but then you're right back at it the next week.
Yeah, I was saying to Jason, because last weekend I ended up having a lot to do at work. I had a concert Saturday night, and that meant like an all-day load in Friday, all day at the venue on Saturday. There's a lot that had to happen. And so and then we had family in town and friends in town as well, so I had to spend time with them on Sunday. So then I got to Monday, and like late Sunday night, I watched most of SummerSlam, finished it on Monday morning, and then had to speed through NXT TakeOver before Jason and I did .NET Live. And right as I called in for .NET Live, I was watching like the 10 count of the last man standing match at TakeOver. It was just like, okay, watch everything right now. So I probably need to go back, and especially with TakeOver, rewatch that show. But it was quite a weekend.
Yeah, I mean, that, you crammed in a lot of content then in a very short period of time. It's difficult to do that and like formulate opinions on it. So
almost impossible.
I'll have to go back and like listen to the live show and see if you're just like, yeah, I'm still thinking about this. But for me, like, you know, recording immediately after SummerSlam, like that's difficult.
Also
too,
difficult. You're coming off a 7-hour marathon.
Because then, you know, Monday I'm at work sitting at my desk and I'm thinking about something and I'm like, I really should have thought about this more before I spoke after the pay-per-view. But it is what it is. But it's exhausting after a while too. I mean, I'm sure Jason, just by the time Wednesday rolled around, he was just collapsing into a couch somewhere.
I assume he's still collapsed into a couch. Everything that's gone up on the site, he already scheduled, I'm guessing. And Jason is just collapsed onto a couch, kind of convulsing a little bit.
Nap time is great.
Yeah.
As an adult, you figure that out. But as a child, you hate it. It's a weird phenomenon.
Yeah, it's really the strangest thing, because I remember being like, you know, 3 and 4 and being like, I won't take naps. And I'm like, oh, if I had known. I wish. So, Jake, I thought this week, coming off of SummerSlam, it might be a fun time to dig into the box of big questions I keep next to my podcast recording area. And I pulled out the question, if there was one thing in wrestling you could change, what would it be? So it's the full wrestling business. It's pretty much wide open. So I'm going to give you mine. I would make every wrestling show 6 to 8 matches long. I feel maybe 5 to 8. But I think about this, especially coming off of SummerSlam. SummerSlam, if it were a 6-match show, would be an awesome 6-match show. And that's been true for the last few years. Remember a couple years ago, John Cena and AJ Styles had a gosh dang classic in the middle of SummerSlam that was virtually forgotten the next day because Brock Lesnar made Randy Orton bleed a lot. Why would you make it so people can't see that match? Why would you make it so people can't experience the greatness that was Lesnar and or that was Styles and Cena in that moment? I truly believe that if shows were 5 to 8 matches long, not a lot would get lost in the shuffle, and you would have more engaged fandom for the entirety of them. I think that's one of the big amazing things NXT does, is it says less is more, and we're willing to leave people off of shows. And I wish all of wrestling would take that attitude. I've been to 6-hour indie shows and I have not had fun. I've watched, you know, 8-hour New Japan cards and they're not enjoyable. Let's all just tighten it up a little bit.
I'm in agreement. I think the time, just the time commitment itself is a lot to ask of people. I mean, you look at the most well-regarded television shows of the last decade, and none of them, I can't think of one other than maybe special event episodes where they stretch much past 80 or 90 minutes. Like some of those really marathon Game of Thrones episodes got, they're close to 90 minutes, but
And those are
wrestling.
a little too long.
Yeah,
Those
I would
episodes
agree.
go on a little more than they should.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think wrestling, you just have this expectation of this weekly commitment, whether it's, 3 or 5 hours, depending on if you watch both Raw and SmackDown, and if you're somebody who actively hunts out, New Japan shows on New Japan World or, Ring of Honor's television show. If you really, if you're Jason or ourselves or, Wade Keller or Dave Mills, somebody who covers wrestling actively, it's a gauntlet to try and consume all of this content. And, fans who watch more casually, I think have an advantage in that regard, where they don't get the same level of burnout as some of the hardcore fans do. And I think that leads to, people's opinions becoming more and more cynical as time goes on. But if you shorten shows like you say, do you think there'll be any unintended consequences of making that dramatic shift? Will fewer people end up being featured and thus, fewer people end up being employed by major wrestling organizations? And so there's, I guess it would mean more independent talent if that, if that scenario plays out, or maybe it just means, more wrestling companies end up forming because there's more talent available.
Well, I think there's ways to keep it fresh as well. I look at, say, Raw and SmackDown, and even leaving both of those shows at the length they currently are, this putting less matches on the major shows, that gives you more room to feature other wrestlers on your weekly TV. You can main event Raw with the tag titles, main event SmackDown with the tag titles without it being a pay-per-view rematch or something. You can do so much more with the talent that isn't getting overexposed by being there for a half hour on Sunday, then there for a half hour on Tuesday. That to me, it's almost like limiting one thing removes limits in another way and lets you, to use a term we use a lot in kind of our world of criticism, it lets you give away more on TV. I think limiting those big shows makes your TV product more compelling and makes your pay-per-view product more compelling and easier to consume for the masses. And you look, it's not just wrestling fans who complain about length. NFL fans, I watch a lot of football every year. Jake, games take 4 freaking hours to watch.
It's painful.
I just signed up to NFL Game Pass because I recognize having a kid this year, I probably won't see a ton of football live. They do 40-minute condensed replays of games. Those are going to be so fun to watch at 3 a.m. when the kid won't sleep.
I have watched Red Zone during most NFL Sundays during the day because sitting down and watching a full game at this point, it's painful. It's like there's just so much, commercialization has essentially taken over the game. Like it's, you got to pause here for a commercial break, and then there's, penalties out the wazoo, and it gives them another excuse to roll to commercials, and it's crazy. Like a 60-minute football game should not take 3.5, 4 hours. It's mental.
Well, yeah, and same thing, baseball. They're trying to make baseball faster, and it's the slowest sport that has ever been invented. Like, I think things like this being too long is actually a major issue across everything. I complain that most Marvel movies are too long if they aren't Black Panther or Infinity War. Like, tell me why Ant-Man needed to go over 2 hours. It's Ant-Man. That wasn't necessary.
I don't know. I think it's a problem for Marvel in general. Like they do so much fan service, even to the detriment of story sometimes. Like they just got to get everybody in these movies, and it gets obnoxious. I think superhero movies are, they're not in a bust period or anything, but I think they've sort of fallen off. Like it's difficult to get, like, you're 18 movies in at this point. Like if you just drop somebody in to watch Avengers Infinity War who hadn't seen a previous Marvel movie. It makes no sense to them at this point.
Well,
like, there's no cohesive story.
At least they'll know Thanos was right.
He was right.
Yeah, Thanos was right. That's my unpopular opinion here. But yeah, I think limiting content, again, like, to me, Takeover is the perfect example of this. When was the last time Cassius Ohno was on a Takeover? This last Takeover, yeah, it was supposed to have Aleister Black on it, and honestly would have benefited from it, but Aleister Black wasn't on the card. All but two women in the NXT brand weren't on the card. You look at all of the people they leave off, and I would argue they should have at least two women's matches on each Takeover, but, you know, that's my hill to die on. But even if you add in another one, that's still most of the roster that is left off of Takeover. Takeovers are really fun to watch. They move, and it makes it so when you get to NXT TV the next week, yeah, I didn't see Pete Dunne on Takeover, but I see Pete Dunne here in a main event. That guy's great. Pete Dunne is awesome, and I want to watch the show now. If you didn't see, and I'm not saying leave, you know, the Universal or WWE Championship off of pay-per-views, but if you didn't see the Intercontinental title defended on every pay-per-view, but it was defended in the main event of Raw sometime around there, cool. That's way more fun. Same thing, if you didn't see the Universal Championship, which, you know, seeing the Universal Championship defended is still kind of a new thing to all of us. I think we need a little time to adjust. But if you didn't see the U.S. title defended on every show, who cares? I don't need to see Shinsuke Nakamura nutshot everybody all the time. You can save that for TV. I believe WWE especially would have a stronger product, but Jake, I'd like the Tokyo Dome a lot more if it wasn't an 8-hour show. I like I said, I would like indie shows more if they booked a little less talent. And I know that means fewer wrestlers get paid sometimes, but I think the wrestling business would be a lot easier for people to enjoy and get into if shows were 6 hours or weren't 6 hours. Maybe you'd be running four or five more indie shows in the U.S. per weekend if wrestlers weren't on these 8-hour monolithic shows because everyone feels like they have to make a PWG show, which are way too long.
So,
and gotten overboard.
I guess you're arguing against the more is more theory that that Vince McMahon and I guess others in WWE have sort of shepherded out there, that, you know, we have this hardcore base of fans that will just consume as much content as we push out there. And if you're a casual fan, maybe you take the approach of just consuming the content you want and avoiding what you don't. But there, you know, I guess is the, are you, how do you, you know, what kind of analysis would you want to be used to determine which, you know, people are featured on a pay-per-view, which people are left off? Like, are you advocating for a different kind of approach to the way these shows are built? You want to use the Takeover model as the base for, you know, the main roster and maybe other, because at this point I think, you know, what we're seeing is WWE adopts a particular approach, whether it's more is more, where they just try to, you know, they push longer shows and more matches on cards and get everybody on the show and get as many people paid, you know, for a pay-per-view date as possible. And then you see independent promotions go, or, you know, even New Japan. And then if you want to look at it that way and say, okay, well, if WWE's running 4-hour shows, then if I run a good 3-hour show, then I'm doing great, you know. And I think that it just sort of expands you know, people's expectations for length in a negative way.
That is a very good question. I would look at the most important matches being on, and I would gauge that a lot of the way Takeover does. Say if I'm WWE, their monthly pay-per-views, because they're co-branded, you've got four world titles essentially that I think should always be defended on pay-per-view because that's important. The WWE Championship, the SmackDown Women's Championship, the Universal Championship, and the Raw Women's Championship should all always be featured on pay-per-view. So, I recognize that's already at four matches. Where's the space for your upper mid-card grudge match? Where's the space for your Intercontinental and U.S. title matches? If you want to get both of those on there, now you've got six matches, boom, I've decided you've capped out. I think there's a way to say those four matches, those four are very important. The next 2 to 3 matches that'll be on the card will decide on a monthly basis. Which feuds are hot enough to be on pay-per-view? Where does it make sense? Would this work? And I think a great question, would this work as a Raw or SmackDown main event? If it will, go with that. Like, if it's going to give you a big Raw or SmackDown main event, go with the title, the U.S. title being defended there, or the Intercontinental or the tag titles defended there. Go with propping up the TV show as well as the pay-per-view. And it makes it so, even if they're good, you're not going to have a 30-minute match in the middle of a 7-hour pay-per-view that you just don't care about. You're going to have something better. Crowds are going to be more excited. They're going to be hot for the 6 to 8 matches they get, far more than they'll be hot for the, you know, 13 matches at SummerSlam. I think you're actually making the product look, feel, seem a lot better when you are condensing it that way, because crowds at Raw are going to be hotter too. They're going to be seeing wrestlers they didn't just see wrestle a bunch the night before. The Raw after a pay-per-view can still feature a great main event without it being made that night the way Roman Reigns and Finn Balor was, which, I mean, that Roman Reigns and Finn Balor actually, I think, was my favorite match of the weekend, all things considered. But you don't need all of this, you know, you don't need all of the content for everything. And as far as getting wrestlers onto shows, because I know that's a big argument in favor of WWE stocking talent, I think it might be time just to salary wrestlers. And I know that's anathema to people in the wrestling business, but if you can just say, hey, this is the salary you get, plus merchandise, plus, you know, bonuses for great matches, being very popular, etc., etc., I think then wrestlers wouldn't feel like, well, I'm a solid mid-carder. I'm Tyler Breeze. I need to be on the pay-per-view. Like, no, don't penalize a wrestler for playing their part well, even if it means they're Kurt Hawkins and they lose on main event every week. Like, that wrestler should get paid and should make the pay-per-view bonus that everyone else makes. And maybe you do give a little more to the main event selling the pay-per-view. But I think there's a lot to be said for just saying, yep, the wrestlers get this amount of money, regardless of whether or not they wrestle on pay-per-view.
And I think, you know, it gets to be difficult, particularly because, you know, it's not like, I guess, baseball, for instance, where, you know, the sabermetrics is what I'm trying to come up with, that mathematical formula that Billy Beane and the Oakland A's used to sort of determine future performance based on, you know, mathematical factors and quantitative analysis of, you know, of previous performance and things of that. And, like, you can't really do that with wrestling, because not everybody has the same, you know, inputs and outputs. You know, a lot of the booking is just done by feel. You know, it's still determined by, it's done by committee, but essentially one man is making all of these calls, and it's all based on his, you know, his whimsies at a particular moment in time. So there's really no, you know, like, if you were going to try to develop a formula or a way to, you know, adequately, you know, analyze which matches or which feuds you're building at a particular time, or should be your pay-per-view matches, it's hard to do. And I think currently, you know, it seems like NXT, you know, led by Triple H, is doing a better job of that than the main roster is with Vince. And so maybe that's, that's the issue here, is that a lot of these, policies are just driven by one person who may, you know, be getting increasingly out of touch with his audience. And then, when the largest wrestling company in the world continues down the same path for so long, even when so many other people disagree with it, a lot of other companies end up sort of just picking it up because it's the trend in the industry at a particular moment in time. And we've seen that, whether it's, you know, your PWGs or your Ring of Honors or your New Japans. I mean, everybody is running 4+ hour shows at this point, and it's just obnoxious.
Well, and to me, it hurts them. Look at the show Ring of Honor ran WrestleMania weekend. That was like 5 hours long. They had a main event that, to me, at that point was the match of the weekend going into WrestleMania with Cody versus Kenny Omega. people were excited for that, but they had to sit through so much on that Ring of Honor show because they wanted to, it was a big crowd and they wanted to get everyone on the show. Yeah, that's not necessary. Have a good show. I think maybe the way to put this is wrestling promotions need to be more concerned about the overall quality and the way people will enjoy their show, both in the building and at home, more than they're concerned about getting all the talent on or making the boys happy. Wrestling needs to be about the fans more than anyone else. And if you can make that show, if you can make that 5-hour show interesting, go for it. I've seen maybe one or two truly great 5-hour wrestling shows in my life, but I've seen a lot of bad ones. But I've seen a lot of very good 2.5-hour shows. They're refreshing. They are fun. They're a jaunt compared to what we get now. And it would be amazing to see that, say, from WWE on a monthly basis. I'll tell you, one of the things I'm really scared about with Ring of Honor running Madison Square Garden this coming WrestleMania weekend, they have a bad habit of running shows that are way too long. And they exhaust people. Fans don't care. And that show, like it or not, it will be judged against the NXT TakeOver happening at the same time. That NXT TakeOver is going to have a ton of talent on it, some that people may be expecting on that Ring of Honor show if WWE's checkbook is big enough. It's going to have a ton of talent. It is going to be a stacked card, and Ring of Honor is likely to combat that NXT TakeOver that is going to be 2.5 hours with a 5 or 6 hour show where they try to get freaking Cheeseburger on the card for some reason. It's not necessary. It doesn't need to happen. And it's one of those things in wrestling that I think it is one of the most detrimental things wrestling promotions do.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's talent want to be on shows. I mean, clearly, like, everybody wants to be a part of their promotion's biggest event. And I'm sure that will be the case in New Japan and in Ring of Honor when the MSG show comes around. I mean, they've never, it's a historic arena. Obviously they've made their, you know, their big proclamations about that, but you know, they're going to want to try and get as many people on that show as they can. And if, you know, even if it comes at the detriment of the overall quality of the show. And I think it's difficult to get a bunch of, you know, people in a locker room who are all, you know, looking out for their own individual interests as well as, you know, the interests of the company to, you know, put their own, you know, the paychecks and everything else aside to say, okay, I'm willing to not make an appearance on this show because I think it'll help, you know, the overall company is by putting on a better, tighter broadcast. I don't know how many people you get are very, you know, comfortable with saying that. Like, everybody's going to take the opportunity to be on the show if it's offered to them.
But in the end, are wrestling shows, I mean, I know I don't watch wrestling as a charity project for the wrestlers involved. Like, I'm not watching going, man, I really hope Tyler Breeze is on this pay-per-view because, and I'm beating up on Tyler Breeze a little bit. I think he's very talented. But I'm not watching going, I really hope X is on this. I'm watching going, I want to watch a good show. And I think fans won't be upset and will be more enthusiastic about a product. And if fans are more enthusiastic about it, say if I watch a 2-hour Ring of Honor show from Madison Square Garden that's hot from top to bottom, everything on that show matters, it's fun, it's fast, and I'm blown away by it, I'm gonna want to watch more Ring of Honor shows. As it is, I watch a 5-hour Ring of Honor show and I go, all right, I'm done for probably 6 months with this promotion. I don't really want to do this anymore. And that's bad. Like, I look at All In coming up and I go, does that show need to be that long? Yeah, same thing. I think it's bloated, and I think it's maybe mean to say all wrestling shows are bloated nowadays, but I think they are, and there are better ways to handle it that don't have talent. You know, I'm not saying lay off a third of your wrestling talent. I'm saying selectively use a third of your, you know, selectively use all of your wrestling talent. Adding in, if, you know, WWE took this approach, would it be that bad if guys got 3 months off in the middle of the year sometimes, or if a wrestler sat at home for a month occasionally, not because they're injured, but because, hey, it's your break. Let's give you some time to get off the road, get off of the TV ready workout plan, eat some junk food, hang out with your kids. You get a month or two to just be, and then you come back. I think this idea fixes a lot of the ills of pro wrestling's, a lot of the ills of like the excesses of pro wrestling.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I just think there's those consequences that you expect and that you want, and then there's the ones that you don't necessarily think of, off the top of your head when you're tossing out ideas. And I think, talent management becomes a lot more difficult in an environment where you can't. And then maybe the answer is, we're going to introduce mandatory time off, and we're not going to change your downside agreement or whatever the case is for when people are off with injury or they're not featured, that kind of stuff. And you're going to get paid to go home for a couple months out of the year. And then when you come back, we'll reintroduce you to television. That may work. That may satisfy people, or it may irritate a lot of people. I don't know what the reaction would be. So I think there's a lot of positives to it. And I think there's potentially some difficulty there, but maybe, if you're able to adequately, improve the entire promotion and business becomes better as a result of your changes, then maybe people are less likely to complain because they know, the money's good.
Obviously, all of my ideas lead to business being better. that's granted, 5 years ago, I would have advocated for main eventing WrestleMania with Brodus Clay. So
there is that.
I'm real smart.
Funk was on a roll at that point.
It was so on a roll. Jake, what is the one thing you would change about the wrestling industry?
I've kind of been bouncing it around in my head as we've been talking, but...
I did spring this question on you a minute before we started recording. So.
There's quite a few things that I think could be better, but I think the biggest deficiency in wrestling, in my opinion, at this point, is that the writing is so poor in comparison to other television. Nobody has the expectation of watching WWE and getting the type of writing and acting that you would expect from a show like The Wire or Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul or any of those critically acclaimed, film quality television shows. But I think the chasm seems to be so large that I think that would be the one area of wrestling that I would attempt to change. And I don't know, it would take a lot of analysis of the problem to figure out what the largest barriers are to improving that. But I think, even if it required, changing the way that wrestlers are working to be a bit more theatrical, or change the way that, how much and when they sell, or, I would like wrestling to be less about fancy moves and taking dangerous risks with people's bodies, and more about telling dramatic stories. And I think that would be the thing that I would focus on improving. And I think it would start with writing, and it would also end up being reflected in the in-ring product at some point as well.
So you're saying start with writing. What is your, what is your biggest solution to fixing that? And I know you just said it would take some analysis, but I'll put you on the spot here. You go, Paul Levesque gives you a call, says, Jake, I hear you complaining about my writing. I finally got there on my podcast app. Thanks for subscribing. I really appreciate your business, Paul. I want you to come in. You're going to revamp the writing staff. You get carte blanche to do what you need to do. What are some things you try and do to bring up the standard, maybe not even to a like Breaking Bad level, maybe to like a Walking Dead level where everything's just kind of sad and depressing, or maybe to a, not to the standard of the best of TV, but maybe to the standard of the middle of TV. Get it at like the, get things at kind of the mean quality level that you're seeing on TV right now. How do you do that?
I guess you would have to bring in people who are who specialize in dialogue. And it may mean expanding your writing staff, and it may mean, you know, getting rid of some of the writers that aren't performing. I, you know, like I said, there would be a lot of analysis required to figure out where some of these bad segments are coming from. But I think the majority of it, if you look on television, you know, you have a problem with, you know, acting skill for one. So you'd have to bring on, you know, people who could teach and act, you know, coach acting with wrestlers on a regular basis and have the backstage and have them, you know, going through this work with wrestlers on a regular basis. And maybe you would, you know, if we implement your solution earlier, when people get regular amounts of time off, you could put them through courses or acting classes to get them to improve. But I think you look at, you know, how many mistakes are made on WWE TV in terms of delivering dialogue, and yeah, how often the material is bad in terms of just like school, you know, grade school level insults and, you know, dialogue that sounds like two people who are like aliens who are learning to speak English for the first time and don't use the language particularly well. I mean, it's difficult for WWE to replicate human emotion, whether it's positive or negative. And I think that's a problem that you need to replicate, or you need to fix, before you can really address the overall issue. So the acting skill needs to be brought up a level overall. And I know that that takes time, and wrestlers are already busy with their insane travel schedules. And, you know,
each had 3 months off a year.
Well, that would that would certainly help. But I mean, you know, for somebody who has, you know, been in the company for a long time, say Ty Dillinger, who spent, I don't know how many years in developmental, like
not
six,
enough.
Like a long time. And then you get to the main roster and he's still, you know, flubbing through lines, and he's hunting for the cameras, and he just doesn't look natural out there. Like, that's the kind of stuff that, you know, that you could probably correct with some serious acting coaching. And other things like the dialogue that's written on a regular basis, like compare your, you know, Becky Lynch's promo from Tuesday, which was fantastic and well, and for the most part well written, although, you know, it kind of fell apart when she started talking about the fans a little bit, because her motivations were clearly, and, you know, not genuine and forced upon her. But, you know, and you compare that to AJ Styles' promo later on in the show, where he just kind of fumbled over his words and lost track of his thoughts. Like, those are two, you know, Becky Lynch is clearly a better promo than AJ Styles, because she had a lot more to say and she remembered all of it and she delivered it well. And I think a lot of the times you see wrestlers who maybe they write at a level that they have to write because they know that wrestlers aren't going to remember complex lines and dialogue and things of that nature. So it's sort of this cycle of problems that you need to fix, you know, simultaneously in order to really improve the product. But I think what separates, you know, people from getting into wrestling now, or lapsed fans from coming back, is that the rest of the television landscape has moved so far forward from where it was 20 years ago, and wrestling feels just as campy and cheesy as it did in the Attitude Era.
And one thing that you're kind of hitting on here is a big transition that happened in wrestling in the last, let's say, 18 years. It's an adult now, it can vote. But wrestling went from being a mostly improvised form, where wrestlers went out with general ideas of what they were supposed to do and how they were supposed to do it, and maybe with an amount of time on their minds. And wrestlers were brought up learning to do that. That was the skill they developed. You've got 2 minutes to sell the show on Thursday night at the rec center. Look at the camera and do it. You know, you hate this guy hates you. Go. Have fun. Get in your catchphrases if you want to sell t-shirts. That's what wrestlers were trained to do, and what even the people training at the performance center generally were trained to do. What happened 18 years ago is wrestling, and WWE is what I'm using as wrestling, kind of in big bold letters here, but WWE said, no, we need to have more control over what content we're putting out there on TV. We're a publicly traded company. We don't want someone to slip up and say X word that they're not supposed to. We don't want someone to slip up and threaten to kill someone's family unless Samoa Joe is scripted to do so. we don't want someone to do that, so we're going to start scripting things. And I know a lot of older wrestlers have issues with scripted promos. I think for the wrestling business, they're better. And I much like I think a scripted match is going to be better than a match you call in the ring, a scripted promo has the chance to tell a better story than a promo you improvise on the spot in front of 15,000 people. It's better. It is a better way to do things. The problem is wrestlers aren't being brought up in a system that teaches them, like you said, human emotion. They're not being brought up being told to act genuinely towards each other. They aren't being brought up learning how actual dialogue works. They aren't, you know, one of the things about Becky Lynch that gets talked about, she took script writing classes in Chicago when she was injured for a while. She's taken acting classes. Like, she's a phenomenal promo who can get just about any reaction she wants out of people. I've got a blog going up later today about Becky Lynch as a heel and how I think it's actually a great move. But I look at wrestling and I go, oh, we got some real, we've got people writing C-minus material on national TV, on TV that's about to be on network TV that wouldn't live up to that standard if it weren't, quote unquote, just wrestling. I think WWE needs to get, I'm with you in saying the place to start fixing it is the storytellers and the script writers need to sit down and say, okay, this is how we're going to do this. Maybe you bring in directors who are there to coach acting and you bring them on the road, especially to TV. You bring in someone who's not just saying, okay, we got the shot, we're good, but who can say, hey, we're going to shoot this again. And I need you, and this doesn't work for live promos, obviously, but hey, we're going to shoot this again. I need you to show me X motivation. Have you thought about playing this quieter? Have you thought about doing this, you know, a funny acting thing that I think is parodied on the show Barry on HBO, as most acting things are, and serial killing things. A funny thing that's parodied on that show is like, oh, do it like you have a secret. That stuff works sometimes. That stuff can get better reactions out of people sometimes. And I think in wrestling, you can do a lot more, especially backstage, especially with pre-tapes, than they're doing or than WWE is doing. And you have tighter control over the acting and scripting. And that's going to bleed over into the quality of your in-ring segments. That's going to make all of that stuff feel more natural and less stylized or of the world of wrestling and more in our actual world.
And yeah, I think, you know, one thing that just popped into my head, kind of building on what you were saying, is that, you know, there's kind of a bubble, you know, that you live in when you work in particularly WWE, but I'm sure it exists elsewhere in wrestling companies where they typically have ex wrestlers who know how the company operates or has operated in the past as producers, you know, whether it's for matches or for dialogue. And, you know, the writers that have succeeded long term are the people that, at least in the environment that currently exists, have, you know, who have pleased Vince McMahon the most over the years. And so they just know how he operates. Like, if you've heard, you know, former creative members or even people like Bruce Pritchard and Jim Cornette and J.J. Dillon and people who have worked with Vince over the years, like they discuss what it's like to pitch him ideas. And you know, they begin to formulate their ideas based on what they know he likes and not what they think is actually the best. And I think they're, you know, part of fixing this issue of, you know, of this creative issue, the chasm that exists between very good television and what we see, you know, from a storyline perspective in WWE, is probably going to involve a lot of hiring of external people who don't have a lot of wrestling experience. And they'll have a learning curve, obviously, to come in and learn the product and what makes it tick. But not having all of those years of adaptations and experience working for Vince might allow them to pitch some different kinds of ideas and suggestions that aren't currently being heard, at least inside the company as it is.
Yeah, one of the frequent things that gets said about the period, I believe the year 2000, which gets praised a lot as WWE's most creative period, one of the things that's frequently said about it is they brought in a different writer who had a process. That guy liked to storyboard things, really like lay out where things were going, not in a notebook, but say like, okay, we've got, you know, we're working towards this match. We got 4 weeks to get there. Let's get this up on the board right now and figure out how we're going to make everything work together. And you ended up with a creatively superior product that kind of put the death knell in WCW when WCW had Vince Russo doing everything he possibly could on TV. I think WWE needs to get back to some of those fundamentals. They, you know, I don't think it's their writing staff that is all bad. I agree with you that it's a top-down thing. It's, well, the Vince McMahon approach to TV is X, and why would you bother writing an intricate and wonderful promo if it's going to get torn up 5 minutes before TV because the old man wants something different on this show. The old man didn't think it had enough poop jokes, so we gotta tear this up and write a poop jokier version. And I wouldn't blame a writer for being discouraged in that process. I think it's right, but I do think you're onto something by saying the standard of TV is drastically raised. The standard of WWE in 18 years has been about a flat line. It is the exact same, and it is an issue. And I think it's one of those things where a rising tide would raise all ships. You would end up with, I think, WWE improving in that area and producing more consistent quality television. You're going to end up with a better New Japan because people are going to go between the companies. People are, and they're going to up their standards to compete. You're going to end up with a better Impact Wrestling that maybe won't involve a child getting killed. You're going to end up with better.
What the hell was that, by the way?
Like,
that
no was idea.
Weird, that was bizarre.
Yeah.
But I think what we're kind of getting at here, and your, you know, your issue that you brought up earlier, and this one that we're discussing now, like, I think it eventually boils down to Vince McMahon releasing his death grip on the product, and I don't know when that's going to happen.
Well, now I'm sad. Jake, what's making you happy in wrestling this week?
You know, I thought TakeOver was fantastic. You know, I really enjoyed those shows, and it always sort of brightens my mood when I think, like, okay, you know, maybe the future's in pretty good hands. You know, if eventually, you know, Vince retires and the people who are now running NXT expand their influence in the company, like, there will be another, you know, quote unquote golden era again when things improve to the point where wrestling is considered mainstream.
I think you're onto something there, and every TakeOver makes me pretty optimistic. This week, the thing making me happy is that Shield reunion at the end of Raw. I thought it was a really fun direction to go in. It legitimately took me by surprise as we got the great match between Finn Balor and Roman Reigns, the whole Braun Strowman's about to cash in segment, and then you add the Shield music hit, and you add Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose walking in step with each other. That was a remarkable little touch there that I don't even know if they did on purpose or if it just worked that way. But you had those guys coming down the ramp in Shield gear. I thought that all worked exceptionally well, and I'm excited to see where things go. It's one of the first times I've been excited about things for a while, and a lot of that is, man, the Shield is just a fun act, and it's one of those things that WWE has always had in their back pocket. And last year, the reunion didn't quite go as planned, even though I was really happy I got to go to a house show that had a Shield match in the main event. I'm interested to see what they do with that act this time, and I think they can do something great.
Yeah, it was very unexpected and a great moment to end Raw. I think, you know, as always, it depends on where they go from here in terms of what the long-term ramifications and success will be. But it was definitely nice to see all three of them back together again, even if it's not a permanent or long-term thing.
And on that, I think we'll wrap it up this week. Jake, I'll talk to you next week or sometime in the future, probably next week, unless, like, my wife goes into labor or something.
Hopefully talk to you next week. If your wife does go into labor, then maybe a few weeks after that.
Yeah. Then it might be a while. And instead of my dogs barking in the back of every audio I do, it'll be the kid crying. That'll be pretty fun.
All right, man. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast. For more, please subscribe to this podcast in Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and a review, show us that you appreciate us, and if you want even more content, check out ProWrestling.net's membership option.